From Portland, Oregon, this is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rocky Roll. Coming up this episode, philanthropy is often seen as an endeavor for older folks, but a group of teens in Portland are proving that youth need not be an obstacle to making an impact. In my conversation with Reuben Cohen and Celia Janoff from the Oregon Jewish Community Youth Foundation, we discuss their grant-making process from idea to award and why working in this manner to give back to the community has a deeper impact than your average high school fundraiser. Since we're already in school, I also took the time to chat with Danielle Frandina from Facing History and Ourselves. She's helped develop their curriculum on contemporary antisemitism and is speaking at an upcoming K-12 Parent Advocacy Night here in Portland, hosted by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. We talk about what's missing from many schools' approaches to teaching about antisemitism and how parents can get engaged with this important issue. Class, so to speak, is in session. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, presenting a How to Host a Passover Seder webinar Thursday, April 3rd at 7 p.m. Join friend of the podcast and Federation Director of Jewish Life and Learning, Dr. Yosef Rosen, for an approachable guide to hosting your first Seder or making this timeless ritual your own. Sign up today for free at jewishportland.org/Passover Seder webinar, link in the episode notes. Now let's get started with Danielle Frandina from Facing History. Danielle Frandina, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
I'm not Jewish. My Jewish journey started when I was born because I grew up in Colorado. There was really like quite a small Jewish community in my school, but my best friend was and is Jewish, still my best friend, who I've known since birth. And that meant that growing up, I went to Shabbat dinner at his house and celebrated Sukkot in his sukkah and went to Passover Seders. And that was my earliest exposure to Judaism and also just having really incredible conversations, you know, around the Shabbat table about Jewish culture and Jewish identity. And after college, I became a high school teacher, and I taught in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then I taught in San Francisco. And when I moved to San Francisco, I started teaching at a new school at the time called the Jewish Community High School of the Bay. This was the first high school in San Francisco that was a community Jewish high school. So students just needed to self-identify as Jewish. We had a really diverse population as far as levels of observance, where students were coming from. I ended up teaching there for 11 years. Just having a community that was so open and willing to have lots of conversations with me, I guess, continued me on that journey that I never think I intentionally set upon. I'm Italian and Irish and was raised Catholic. I only left JCHS in San Francisco because I moved to Portland for love and took some time off of teaching, missed it terribly, worked one-on-one with students for a long time doing academic coaching. And then I found out that Facing History was starting a new initiative called the Contemporary Antisemitism Initiative, and that they were hiring. And I had, as a teacher, I had used Facing History a lot. Particularly, our kind of flagship material is called Holocaust and Human Behavior. Mm-hmm. So when I was teaching at JCHS, because it was a new school, we were really designing the curriculum fresh for, you know, each year. And we were designing a Holocaust unit for sophomores for world history and world humanities. That's when I first was exposed to Facing History, and I was so impressed by the rigor of the curriculum, the way it asked students to make connections between history and their own lives, you know, especially as a non-Jew, it was really important to me to be very thoughtful and careful and intentional about how to teach the Holocaust to a community where, you know, many of these students, almost all of these students, had some sort of familial connection to that time and to the events of the Holocaust. So Facing History really provided that intentional, thoughtful curriculum. And when I found out that they were hiring a curriculum designer for this new program on contemporary antisemitism, I applied, and that was about 3.5 years ago.
Can you tell me a little more about Facing History and the contemporary antisemitism curriculum you've been working on? That I understand it, it's not just for Jewish high school students, it's for the entire gamut of high school education.
Yeah, that's correct. Facing History creates curriculum for students all over the country, actually all over the world. Facing History's mission is to use lessons of history to challenge students and teachers to stand up to anti-Semitism, racism, and other forms of bigotry. So that's our focus. We have this, what we call our pedagogical triangle, which has these three key elements: ethical reflection, academic rigor, and emotional engagement. And so those three components are infused in everything we do, with the idea, the end result in a way being like very active civic engagement and civic responsibility, which we use the language of upstander to really talk about the kind of student we want to help shape, which is a student who enters into their adult life being an upstander, not being a silent bystander, standing up, as the mission says, when they encounter anti-Semitism, racism, other forms of bigotry. The way the contemporary anti-Semitism team came about is, I think around 2020, Facing History realized that, you know, amidst a steady increase in anti-Semitism, the organization didn't have a lot of materials on contemporary anti-Semitism. We had this really robust Holocaust curriculum, and I think worried that we weren't really responding to this rise in anti-Semitism, or even more so maybe bridging what students were learning in a Holocaust unit to what happened since then in regards to anti-Semitism. And there's a danger there that students might leave a Holocaust unit with two kind of dangerous takeaways. One, that maybe anti-Semitism ended at the end of, like, it was solved at the end of the Holocaust.
And that
was,
you know, nice.
Yeah. And then the other is that if that is in a classroom or a community where there are very few Jewish students or no Jewish students, if this is the only exposure that non-Jewish students have to Jews is in the context of the Holocaust, that felt really flattening and limiting and could possibly leave students feeling like they had no sense that there even was modern, thriving Jewish life beyond the Holocaust. So with, I think, those concerns, the Contemporary Anti-Semitism Initiative was born at Facing History.
What kind of things have you seen that are in place in schools that aren't using Facing History's curriculum, both in terms of Holocaust education and education about contemporary anti-Semitism and anything about contemporary Jewish life? And it sounds like the answer may well be not much.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think I could speak to assessing other Holocaust curriculum.
Fair enough.
But yes, I think Facing History, we also do professional learning. So we have two courses on contemporary anti-Semitism, one that's on the history of anti-Semitism and one that's really on, you know, how and when it shows up today. So we do get to meet and work and study with educators from all over the country and other countries. And it does seem like teachers often come in without a lot of understanding of anti-Semitism beyond the Holocaust and without a lot of confidence to talk about it in the classroom. Anti-Semitism has not been a topic that has shown up in professional development for teachers in any kind of significant way, you know, over the last several decades. Yeah.
Moving the subject from teachers to parents for a moment, you're soon to be leading a parent advocacy training for parents of school-age students here in Portland. And I imagine that has something to do with the fact that some of what's being taught in schools around contemporary Jewish life is maybe less than focused on the issues of anti-Semitism, shall we say.
My focus as a member of the contemporary anti-Semitism team is really to help everybody. So that would be parents and teachers and students understand both the particulars of anti-Semitism and also how it intersects with other forms of racism and bigotry. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is helping people recognize anti-Semitism. We often talk about anti-Semitism as like a smog that we breathe. It's been around so long. It's so infused, particularly in the form of anti-Semitic tropes and conspiracy theories, what we typically call false narratives at Facing History. It's so infused in our culture that people don't see it. And so they don't always know when they're trafficking in anti-Semitism. So that may come in a form of, you know, something that seems very obvious, like swastikas in the bathrooms, which is a very common occurrence in schools all over the country. Or it may be in anti-Semitism might show up in much more hidden ways. So a student might be talking about how they're feeling about the war in Gaza or what's going on with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and in doing so might start to use anti-Semitic tropes or conspiracy theory language without really being aware of what they're doing. So that's why the education piece is so important, because a lot of that trafficking in anti-Semitism is done without a lot of awareness. Another really important part of this work is bringing contemporary Jewish identity to non-Jewish classrooms. And that doesn't always seem like this obvious way of combating anti-Semitism. But again, when you think of how small the Jewish population actually is, there are many classrooms that just have no exposure to Jewish life or culture. So in this parent advocacy gathering, I'm going to be highlighting some of our lessons. One of the lessons I'm going to highlight is actually our newest lesson, which is on the complexity and diversity of Jewish identity, and really challenging a mainstream, very limited perception of what it means to be Jewish and what it looks like to be Jewish. So really looking at just how vast Jewish identity is in this country and all over the world, so that students can really move away from these stereotypes that end up being really harmful to understanding what Jewish identity could mean and might mean and does mean.
Well, thank you so much for helping to build those resources and for sharing them with our community. And thanks for your time. Danielle Frandina, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you so much, Rotten, for having me.
Thanks again to Danielle Frandina at Facing History for her time and leadership in this field, and to my colleague Rachel Nelson for helping bring this conversation together. You can learn more about Facing History's work online at facinghistory.org and sign up for Federation's K-12 Parent Advocacy Night, Monday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at Congregation Neve Shalom in Portland, online at jewishportland.org/April Parent Advocacy Night. Link in the episode notes. While you're there, you can also find information on community Passover Seders and where to find the makings of your own celebrations at the Federation's Passover Happenings page at jewishportland.org/Passover Happenings. Now, let's hear from Celia Janoff and Reuben Cohen at the Oregon Jewish Community Youth Foundation. Celia Janoff and Reuben Cohen, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. So, can you each tell me about your Jewish journey?
Yeah, I can start. I've grown up in a pretty conservative Jewish family. We've gone to synagogue on all the high holidays, but it was never really a big part of my life until I joined my Jewish youth group, BBYO, and then it started to become more impactful on me, and I just, like, learned to build a community within it.
Yeah, for me, I also grew up in a very Jewish household, and I would celebrate Shabbat dinners on Friday night, which has made a lot of fun memories with my family and my older brother. And we don't go to synagogue so much. We go on important holidays, but it's really been an important part of my life because I feel like it's really made me feel connected to my family. So it's really important to both my grandparents. Visiting them and celebrating like Hanukkah at their house is always like really fun. It's just really made me feel close to those around me.
That's really beautiful. We're here today to talk about the Oregon Jewish Community Youth Foundation. For the uninitiated in the audience, what is OJCYF and what does it do?
OJCYF is a Jewish youth foundation, and we work as a group to collect money over a period of time from different donors and sponsors that we've accumulated throughout the years. And then we have a big benefit gala dinner to celebrate and gain more donations. And then at the end of our years, we spend our time donating that money to grant allocations and supporting local nonprofits. This year, we're specializing in funding organizations that work towards going against anti-Semitism in today's world. And so that's one of our main focuses this year.
Just like Celia said, so it's a group of local Jewish teens, and there's about 30 of us this year. There's a leadership committee, which is a smaller group of us, which is about 8, and we are both on that. So we have meetings about once a month and kind of work through steps in that process that Celia just described. She also mentioned we have different justice issues each year, which is an important part of our work. And at the beginning of the year, we have a lot of discussions as a group about what values we really think are important to us as Jewish teens and just our Jewish community. We also fund non-Jewish organizations, so it's not always within the Jewish community, but it definitely is a Jewish focus. And in previous years, justice issues were like climate change, mental health. This year, yeah, there's a lot about accurate Israel education and combating anti-Semitism.
Yeah. So I think usually when we, and by we, I mean the broader world outside of the confines of this interview, think about teenagers doing charitable activity, it's usually sort of a solo activity. You fundraise for your school or your sports team or some project like that. How much more valuable is it for you guys that you undertake this work as a group, as a pretty big group from the sounds of it?
Yeah, I think it's honestly what makes the committee so special. We all get to learn together about what a nonprofit is and how we're going to decide to allocate the money that we raise. And I think coming together as a group helps each of us learn in a new environment, and we're not just going off solo. We can all come together and figure it all out together.
The fact that we have a pretty large group allows us to have really meaningful discussions, and we can hear a lot of different perspectives, and that allows us to make really meaningful use of our fundraising and our grant giving. The other thing about the difference between just individual charity or this group is that, I mean, Celia's in BBYO, but I'm not. So this is just a way that I was able to meet a lot of Jewish teens in the area. And in Portland isn't like a hugely Jewish area like some other cities. So that was a special opportunity.
You mentioned that the Community Youth Foundation is focusing on combating anti-Semitism this year. What were the discussions like that led to the selection of that goal? And what are some examples of the ideas that have come forward as like proposals to combat that the committee's considering?
Yeah, I can talk about the first part, but at the beginning of our meetings this year, one of them was really focused on narrowing down what we wanted our mission statement to be. So figuring out what our goal was to work towards this year. We had tons of ideas, like Ruben was saying. Last year, we did climate change, and people brought up ideas like that again, lots of homelessness, things that are relevant to the Portland community. But we all decided that with everything going on, like after October 7th, that combating anti-Semitism was going to be a really important cause for us this year. And so we kind of collectively just decided that was going to be our number one thing to focus on. Yeah.
And I think along with that, like the Israel education piece that we're focusing on this year, came out of really local instances and people in the group who had felt like there had been situations at their schools that had made them feel uncomfortable as a Jew in the classroom and what was being taught. And just as Jewish youth who want to be involved, we were feeling the impact of all those different things. And so we really just felt like dedicating to those justice issues this year would allow us to see really good use of our efforts.
And also, as that for that second part of your question, like, have we gotten any proposals or anything that's related to that? We do a bunch of site visits for each of the organizations that we get a proposal from, or at least the ones that we think we're going to go into funding. For example, we just had one called Hand to Hand, which is a lot of the proposals for combating anti-Semitism and Israel education that we've gotten have been a combination of working with all different religions, all different kinds of people to just create a better narrative about what's going on. So this one that I was just learning about, Hand to Hand in Israel, it's located, and they're bringing Jewish and Arab students together to learn about the conflict, to create peace and desegregate that kind of separation that's been there for a while between Arab students and Jewish students. And so we've gotten a bunch of different proposals that are just bringing people together and listening and having open conversations.
So we touched a little bit on the process, looks like, but just to get the nuts and bolts out of the way, what does the process look like from beginning to end for a year in the Community Youth Foundation?
At the beginning of the OJCYF year, the board is, usually there's returning members and also new ones, so we do activities to meet them and become familiar and comfortable with each other. And mixed in with that is kind of beginning to decide on the justice issues, and then we get in more into the discussions of what we feel would be meaningful for that OJCYF year, and then we get into actually fundraising. So in that, we get to do and learn a lot of interesting skills. So there's cold calling previous donors, there's trying to recruit new donors. So that takes up a lot of the process and teaching that to new people on the board. So once we have our justice issues and our fundraising, we're able to start sending out the word that we are going to be receiving grant proposals and what our mission statement is for that year, so we can hear back from organizations that feel like it would align with what we're doing. And then after that, the bulk of our work is to really go through all those proposals and have discussions about a lot of them and decide, do we think these will line up with what we want to see this year, or do we want to partially fund them or fully fund them? Because that's another thing we can figure out. And there's hard decisions there with sometimes a lot that we want to fund, but obviously we have a limited amount that we've raised, so we have to narrow that down. And then kind of the culminating event of all our work is the benefit dinner, which happens every year in April. And that is for anyone who has been a part of our OJCYF journey this year or a donor. And it's also another fundraising opportunity. And it's a really fun event. And you get to hear from members of the board and the leadership committee. And we have good food. And this year it is on Thursday, April 10th, and it's at the East Side Jewish Commons. Cocktails begin at 5:30 p.m. and dinner at 6. And like I said, it's a really fun event this year. Going along with our justice issues, we have a guest speaker, Adam Davis from Oregon Humanities, and he's going to talk about connecting across different backgrounds and belief and creating conditions for mutual understanding.
Outstanding. So you mentioned justice issue, and I keep thinking back to a conversation that I'd had with a coworker recently that when we think of philanthropy, we think of charity, but the Hebrew word tzedek that usually gets translated as charity more literally means justice. How do you guys see the ideas of charity and justice coming together in the work you do?
I think through the community of OJCYF, we get to witness a lot of different people asking for proposals for a grant, people donating, and we just get to form this larger community of all these people who want to help and want to create this bond through tzedek, through community. And I think that justice becomes like a more broader term for just giving back to whatever our cause is that year and whatever people want to focus on. It's a really cool opportunity because we all get to come together and all share our opinions. And we just get to do something good for the world and also come together as Jewish teens. So it's really fun, and it's also just impactful in our community.
Absolutely. So when you've gone on site visits that you were mentioning, mm-hmm. When you're connecting with organizations in this way and going through these applications, what is that process like, and what kind of things are you learning, not only about the organizations that are submitting proposals, but about the grant-making process more broadly?
So I think site visits are definitely one of the most interesting parts of OJCYF. It's like a really hands-on way to just really connect with organizations that are local to us and really impactful. And so when going on those, it's often to get an understanding of more of the ins and outs of what that organization does exactly, so we can really learn about that. And again, like seeing if it lines up with what our justice issues are that year, because that can be really difficult. It can be an organization that the person on the site visit could personally feel really connected to, and they feel it would be really like a good thing to fund. But if it doesn't align so well with what we're doing that year, we won't be able to fund them. So that can be kind of a tough part about this.
You weren't kidding about hard decisions. So what do you guys get to learn through that process beyond just about the folks you're visiting?
I think that it builds a connection between the visitor and the organization or whatever we're interviewing. And so I think that there's only so much that can be said on their grant request. And so you definitely get the feeling for the organization. I've been on ones that just go so deep into describing the work they do, and it makes it feel so much more impactful. Like, I'll read the proposal before and be like, I don't really know if I agree with this or if we should fund this. It doesn't seem like it would have that large of an impact. And then you talk to someone who really works there, and it's completely different, and you get a whole different idea. And it's really flows and sways the way that I think about the proposal sometimes. So I think it's really important.
It sounds like that really puts a face to the work that
definitely.
You're seeing. Yeah, definitely. So I think we usually, and again, we, once again, being the broader community, have this idea that philanthropy is something for older folks, or at least not the young crowd, so to speak. And you guys are significantly younger than me, so it's fair calling you the younger crowd. Why is it so important for you both, and you've been involved in this for a while, to undertake this work while you're still in high school?
Well, I think it's really unique opportunity that OJCYF, that, like you said, the younger folk, like I mean, you can't get this opportunity. Like, I don't know of anywhere else where I would get the opportunity to learn all the skills and do all of this work that I'm able to do there. And it teaches like so many important skills that I don't think I would learn till I was much older, maybe, and if that's something I wanted to go into. But it is really like real world skills. And I think the fact that it's primarily youth run, obviously Susan is a huge gift to us and helps us so much, but in terms of in the meetings and stuff, we really get experience doing a lot of the work ourselves. And so I think thinking of it as just something for older folks, I think OJCYF kind of obviously goes against that and shows that it can be really meaningful to participate in something like this, even as someone younger.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. I think that it is such a shaping organization, and it's definitely made me into a better leader. It's taught me so many skills, and like talking in front of the group and simple things like that, and also talking to adults and learning how to have like a meaningful conversation about money, because that can be difficult. And I think it teaches so many skills outside of just working in philanthropy. Obviously, it's amazing to get an introduction to that at my age, but it has so many life lessons outside of the philanthropic aspect.
Yeah. What are some examples of that both of you have taken away from this process so far?
Well, kind of like Celia mentioned, yeah, talking to people about money, that's been like a huge thing I've been able to get more experience with and get more comfortable with, because it can be something that's difficult. So the cold calling that we do to donors is a huge way to get exposure and experience with that. And also, yeah, a lot of leadership skills. So I think we're on the leadership committee, but even I think OJCYF asks from everyone on the board to at some point kind of step up and out of their comfort zone, whether that be leading an activity at a meeting like the opening or closing, or speaking in front of a lot of people at the benefit dinner. It really just asks of people to step outside of their comfort zone a little bit, but gain really valuable experience.
Yeah, it's also definitely improved my like organizational and planning skills. I'm kind of taking a lead on planning the benefit dinner this year. So that's definitely been a lot of coordinating people and roles and figuring out who's going to write the script and who's going to do the donation drive. And it's a lot of different parts, but I think that OJCYF has taught me how to manage those all really well and just delegate work and make sure that everything is going to flow cohesively in the end.
The organization is a huge aspect. Yeah, I forgot to mention that's been really helpful for me because I'm a little bit disorganized. So this has taught me a lot of maybe harsh but good lessons.
Oh, I wish I would have had that when I was your age. But I think that really points out something that's worth mentioning again. Like, this isn't just play pretend. Obviously, you guys have organizational support, but this is grown-up work you guys are engaged in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I kind of feel like an adult. Like, I almost am an adult, but I do feel more adult when I'm at the OJCYF community than when I'm, like, in school or on my youth group. It definitely feels like a more professional thing that I'm able to experience. And going into college and bigger things and becoming more independent, I think that's super important and really crucial to that.
It's certainly more grown up than anything I was doing when I was rich. What's one of the most fun memories that both of you or either of you have had while you've been engaged with OJCYF?
I have one. Okay, yeah. This is like really not to do with philanthropy, but it was at an OJCYF meeting. But I think making fun with what we're doing is super important, especially as teens. We want to make our experience better. And so at one point, not as much anymore, but I was doing a lot of the social media stuff for our group, and I was getting everyone to make TikToks at our meeting, and it was just so much fun. And I would see them go, because I don't have access to the Instagram, but I would send them to the girl who does the Instagram, and she would post them, and we would all like laugh at them for so long. Me and my sister's in it too, and we would just be laughing forever. And it was so fun because you're getting to do something that's really important, but also in a fun way with people your age. And it's just not really like anything else that I do.
Yeah, those TikToks and posts were a lot of fun.
All right, you're going to have to give me the highlights.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of just more of a funny thing, but something I really look forward to at the meetings is Susan always provides us with like really good snacks every time. And we get a lot of snacks there. And so that's
how good
always,
are we talking about?
Oh, like we'll show up and there's like jars of like candy, and then there's like last time we had like bell peppers and like we get drink. It's kind of all out.
Oh, good. It's like that basket over there that looks really appetizing. It's like a whole table of that, and so I find myself sitting kind of in the back a lot, kind of, you know, hanging around near that
yeah
table.
Last meeting Ruben was just like munching on stuff in the background.
Hey, food is important, and for those who aren't sitting here with us, we're sitting next to a basket with some chips and some popcorn and a few Milano cookies that might be making their way into my audio bag before or shortly after we're done recording. Beyond the snacks and the TikToks and the fun, what are some of the most meaningful experiences you two have gotten out of your time with OJCYF?
Just recently, we had a guest speaker, Dr. Yosef Rosen, who's new to the Portland Jewish community, but he talked to us really well and for a while about kind of like what you were touching on earlier with giving and philanthropy and how it relates really to Jewish values. So always learning about the connection between those two things makes the work feel even more meaningful. So we learned about the different levels of giving that Maimonides came up with. So we take that to heart when thinking about the work we do, and also hearing from Yosef Rosen was a really cool experience.
We've been fortunate to hear back from some of the organizations and just like seeing how this money truly makes an impact on them. And I think it's extremely meaningful to go through such a long process of like trying to decide where to donate, where to not donate, what's a fund, what's a partially fund, and then in the end of it, you can see how amazing these outcomes happen just from us working as some teenagers trying to get some money and give it out. Like, I think that that's the best part for me.
Yeah. Has this influenced either of you in terms of thinking that you might be more likely to engage with philanthropic work, charitable giving, Jewish communal work as you get older?
Definitely. I definitely want to stay involved in this philanthropic, especially Jewish sect of it, because it's just, I feel like, made me a better person and connected me to so many interesting people. And I think that it will just continue to do that in the future.
Similarly, I just think it's kind of opened my eyes to this whole world that I previously didn't really know anything at all about. And it's something I really like. So I'm going to try and stay connected, and having it as part of the Jewish community, which I'm already feel incentivized to be a part of, I think it's going to make that easier.
Well, I feel like a better person having spoken with both of you. So it sounds like you're on the right track. Celia Genoff, Reuben Cohen, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. A huge thank you to Reuben Cohen and Celia Genoff from the Oregon Jewish Community Youth Foundation for their time and their commitment to building Jewish community, as well as to Oregon Jewish Community Foundation's Collaborative Giving Director Susan Berniker for helping bring this episode together. OJCYF's annual gala is one of the events of the season in Portland, and today is the last day to get tickets. You can do so online at ojcf.org/programs/benefit-event. Link in the episode notes. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. Don't forget, you can get the latest news from Portland's Jewish community by subscribing to the Jewish Review for free online at jewishportland.org/jewishreview. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karone Blau-Rothstein. Assistant editor is Rachel Nelson. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rocky Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, class dismissed, and all the best.